The Great Canadian Talk Show.
It was only a couple of watts, but I brought the truth to everyone within three blocks of the west side of campus.
No way! Yes way!
And now, let's get right down to business with Marty Gold.
Welcome to the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. This is episode number 40 of season number 4. I'm Marty Gold. Thank you all for listening. You can get every episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast on actionline.ca under the podcast tab. There's other tabs where things are subdivided into categories like province, city, right? Where we cover the legislature, cover city hall. We have a crime tab, and under the blog tab on the far right, you'll be able to see various articles, both from our past coverage of civic and provincial affairs back in 2019 under the Winnipeg Watchdog blog that's been incorporated into actionline.ca now, as well as more recent blog posts, articles that are written but not accompanied necessarily by a podcast. And that's been on a variety of topics ranging from the disastrous Goulet bike lane to the rise of anti-Semitism on our campuses, both locally and nationally. For instance, British Columbia, Teddy Rosenberg was the example that we used, former Winnipegger, in one of those posts. That actually was accompanied a podcast, and that goes back to the beginning of the year. So it gives you an idea of the kind of stuff that we cover, the kind of things that we're interested in, and of course, your news tips, your comments, and indirect donations are, of course, always welcome. MartyGoldLive@gmail.com. We've been at this for 20 years, both Kick FM, then on Shaw TV with City Circus, and more recently in the digital age with the revival of the podcast. We first used a podcast to bridge the gap between Kick FM and Shaw TV. Now we've revived it over the course of the past few election cycles, really, and we're garnering more listeners, greater success, greater influence. It's not only because of people tuning in, but it's because of the guests that I'm able to get on to talk about important public issues. And we talk about issues from a direction that the mainstream media simply will not do. We don't protect narratives here. We are on your side. We are on the side of your family and your business. And I've made that clear for many years. It's no secret. And that makes us unusual. In the Winnipeg media landscape, that's why we hope you'll continue to support not only this enterprise, but support the people, the causes that we talk about. So many of them are important because, you know, today it's somebody else. Tomorrow it's going to be you, your neighborhood, your family that's adversely affected. One of the stories that we have covered on this podcast, and this was in a more general podcast that we did, back in February, just we kicked off the winter funding drive, actually, and it was strong because we talked about a couple of matters. An RCMP takedown of some shooters in Gimli, and like part two of that episode was about a situation in Winnipeg. We addressed the recent shooting by police of a man in the North End on Magnus Avenue, and he was being apprehended on a mental health warrant. And the Black Rod blog maintained that it was a matter for the courts and provided an analysis that indicated that the details as put out by the authorities themselves didn't match up to the words they used to describe these interactions with the man they were apprehending. In fact, he was shot to death. And the Black Rod blog, beginning a discussion in this community about whether the IIU, the Internal Investigative Unit, was the right place for this to be discussed and evaluated. That blog post echoed on our program in that episode pointed towards a possible need to refer this to the courts and have evidence taken and testimony taken in that manner. That would seem unusual, but not unprecedented and not unwarranted for police officers to face charges after an interaction with a member of the public goes wrong. In this case, with somebody they're pursuing, not because of, you know, criminal allegations of gun smuggling or you know, wholesaling harmful toxic substances or anything of the sort. It was a mental health warrant. They'd had interaction with this victim before. I did not know Bradley Singer. I know some members of the Singer family. Today, you're going to be hearing from one of his brothers, from Jerry Singer, joining me now on the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast to talk about the family's experience in the aftermath of the shooting of their brother Bradley, as well as the details as best they can under the circumstances, as best he can under the circumstances. The family has gotten no answers, but they keep getting hit with bills as it pertains to the police shooting and killing their brother inside his home on Magnus Avenue. Jerry, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Jerry, thank you for joining the program. I wanted first, obviously, to extend my condolences and the condolences of our audience, who I know are sympathetic to a family under whatever circumstances, suddenly having to pick up the pieces because of a totally unexpected fracas that ended up with permanent and sad consequences for your family. I want to find out from you, let's start, if you can, by telling us a little bit more about Bradley, about, you know, his personality, his struggles with his mental health, and the interaction that he'd had with the authorities up until 2024.
Okay, well, Bradley in his early 20s, I'm not sure what happened to him. He might have suffered a nervous breakdown, but he got mentally sick, and he's been mentally ill since that. In his early years, I guess, in his early 20s, they started giving him medicine, and it would calm him down, I guess, or sedate him, rather, but it didn't really, you know, cure what was troubling him. If anything, I think that's where most of his delusions began, when he was forced to take this medicine. But generally speaking, he was a very kind person. He was loved by many. He had a lot of friends and relatives who loved him. And I don't think there's any words that can describe the loss to me, my family, and his friends on him being taken away so cruelly and unnecessarily.
And he's,
you know, he's sorely missed.
Just to explain to my audience, of course, I mean, this... the Singer family, you're sort of a prototypical Jewish North End family of the era in which your parents married and raised kids, right?
Yeah, he had a very good, our parents provided a very good, upbringing for him in childhood. And I don't think he ever had a violent incident in his whole life. He was the exact opposite. He was, you know, one of the most peaceful people you'd hope to meet. You know, and he's very generous too.
So it was I know people, as I indicated to you in a preliminary discussion, I know people who knew him. I might have, again, like at some point, like surely would have like met you, bumped into you, or Bradley or your other brother, just in the course of being around the community or being around Jewish businesses or whatever. But I didn't come into this story with any, any horse in the game, so to speak. But when I looked at the details, I didn't like what I was seeing. And I don't like, certainly the way the facts seem to be laid out, as we'll discuss. So about 20 years ago, your brother started having these problems, and he was, had other situations where the police would come with a mental health warrant and pick him up and take him in for examination. Am I correct?
Yes. In his early 20s, I guess, like this type of thing happened. He wasn't complying with the doctor's conditions and to be in the community, and the police were sent there to apprehend him. The first time it happened, they sent two, I guess what you would call black and white cops.
Yeah, the squad cars.
In their 60s. And, they had no problem with them. They got him to the hospital. And I guess it was, probably because of their experience and empathy towards, the people they're serving,
mm-hmm.
And there was no problem at all.
Was there ever, was there ever at any point up until, like, before 2024, had there been any altercations so to speak, non-cooperative interactions between your brother and the Winnipeg Police Service that you're aware of?
I guess, you know, you could categorize like he was, you know, uncooperative and didn't want to go with them, but there was never any, you know, violent response or threats made by my brother to them.
And there was no other incidents on record of your brother getting involved in any other violent conduct or behavior?
No, if you look through his entire life, there was never any, charges of violence or incidents of violence. And even if you went into investigated his school years, you'd find that there was no incidents of him, being violent or bullying or that type of thing. He was a very nice person.
Okay, so as we move forward into 2024, your brother's living in the house on Magnus, I think it's by Charles or Aikens.
Yeah, in between Charles and Maine.
It's in between Charles and Maine. Okay, so I was right. I'm familiar with the house because it was, kind of distinctive. There's a lot of space around it. It's not a cramped house in that neighborhood. It's when it had a little bit of room around the yard and signs that said that there were cameras in operation. So you could notice the house. And this year, the police came a-calling again for Bradley.
Yeah, what happened, he had a review board hearing. He was under their control in July, and they represented himself. Unfortunately, he didn't get the absolute discharge he was asking for like they gave Vince Lee. But the doctors, like, he was always complaining about this medicine, how it just made him, sedated all the time, and it caused impotency in him. And for some reason, the doctors, because he represented himself so eloquently at the review board hearing, they decided to let him not take his medicine. And so around November, October, middle of October, November, his technology failed him. And he got sort of sick over it. He started dwelling on it and reading all the agreements instead of checking off the box. And, he thought he was being spied upon, by the technology, which I guess is true in every case for advertising, but, not really true that, somebody specific is spying on.
Are you talking about him, like, being online on Facebook or things like that, you mean?
No, just like, his phone started doing weird things, and his cameras and computers.
Okay, so things start to glitch,
Yeah, and he just got sick over it, sort of.
Yeah.
I tried telling him, it's the same for everybody. You either check the box and use their services, you're not going to be able to alter them to your liking, everything is just the way it is.
Uh-huh.
And he started getting this deep understanding of, of all these, shared licensing agreements and source quotes and that. And
so he went down. Kind of a rabbit hole then.
Yeah, he fell into a rabbit hole and just started neglecting his responsibilities, like reporting to the doctors and that.
And so in 2024. Because he had not reported the doctors, the police came a-calling to take him in for an examination. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, about 2 weeks before he was fatally shot by the police, they came there and successfully apprehended him, although he caused a lot of damage to the house. We had, because of the neighborhood, the storefront, roll-up protection over the doors. So that would allow you to leave the house and not worry about some habanegra thief just busting into your house with their shoulder,
mm-hmm.
or maybe a sledgehammer. They need torches or sawzalls or an understanding, mechanical understanding of how those roll-up doors work. So they came and apprehended him, caused, I'd say, about $10,000 damage to the house. They broke off the front roll-up door, and then they took out the window frame and entered through the window, but they I couldn't understand. The frame was intact, but the put it on the ground, and then the glass got smashed. So that was on a Saturday. The following Friday, I get a phone call from the hospital asking me, do you know where my brother is?
I just want to be clear, Jerry. They took him into custody and took him for that examination?
Right.
And then he was released?
Well, you know, he released himself, according to the hospital. Ah. They let him out on a smoke break, and he didn't return.
Okay. So now they go looking for him.
Yeah, so, you know, so I asked them, they asked me, do you know where he is? I says, I can't imagine him being anywhere else but his residence. I don't think he has any other place to go. So I asked them, do you want me to go there and try talking him into coming back to the hospital? And the nurse said, no, it's okay. He can stay at home. We think this is just a nurse talking. It wasn't a doctor. He can just stay at home. We think he's a lot better now. Just have him call us so we know that he's okay. So I went over to his residence. Sure enough, he's there. And I told him, you know, I got a call from the hospital, and they said you could stay here, but they want you to phone him.
Yeah.
So he phoned him on a speakerphone. I listened to the entire conversation, and they said he could stay at home. So I figured, okay, you know, maybe they'll just leave him there. He's not really harming anybody but himself, just by being there, you know. So then about a week and a half later, these IIU people come to my residence and tell me that Brad was involved in, they call it an altercation with police officers, and he's been shot several times. So I asked him, is he still alive? And they said, well, to the best of our knowledge, he came out of surgery okay, and he's at the Health Science Center. So I run and grab my other brother. We go down to the Health Science Center, and we're just really interested in his medical prognosis. We go to information, and then they send us to emergency, and we ask, you know, if our brother is still alive, can we see him? And then they come back with, we don't know who operated on him.
What?
That's what they said, you know. I said, and I'm thinking, like, how is that possible? Somebody comes, you know, in with multiple bullet wounds, and they don't know who treated them. So he said, well, just go to this waiting room, and when we locate the doctors, we'll have them come see you. So we go wait in this waiting room like idiots for 2 hours. All of a sudden, a senior member of this IIU comes in and says, I'm so sorry for your loss. And I was, you know, and then my life was just changed forever. You know, I couldn't believe that they shot him dead executing a mental health warrant, you know. And that's about it, you know.
So
I mean, it was so unnecessary for this to happen. I mean, it's beyond belief.
We're going to take a break, Jerry. When we come back, we're going to talk about the circumstances as analyzed by the Black Rod, and I suppose by your family as well. You're going to have some observations about what is known, what is alleged, what is believed, and whether any of the, if it makes sense from the context of the police are executing a warrant on somebody not, a hardened criminal by any stretch, not somebody who's known to be a danger, and they send in the SWAT team and heavy firepower against a guy barricading himself without any other known problems aside from he doesn't want to be harassed over his mental health. So from his perspective, he's in his own home, and the cops storm the place like it's a motorcycle gang clubhouse. And so I want to get into that with you, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
But I want to get to a break right now. Folks, stay with us. Words from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to find out more about what the family knows, what they don't know, and the bills they've received after the police killed their brother in the course of this executing a warrant on Magnus Avenue in the North End. It's important, and as I said earlier in the program, this kind of thing, it might be somebody else's family that has it happen one day. Could be your family the next. We'll be back with more right after this.
Jamrock Security has effective and creative ways to help protect your business, your home, and your community. Jamrock gets the job done so you can rest easy. Go to jamrocksecurity.ca or call us at 204-880-1564. Do security. Do it smart. Jamrock Security.
This episode of The Great Canadian Talk Show is sponsored by PKP Renovations and Repairs. We take pride in the neighborhoods we work in, serving the North End, West Kildonan, and the Maples Garden City area for over 20 years. Call 204-297-5446 or email us at info@pkprenovations.com. We help make sure Winnipeg has good homes for good people.
You know what's being done that's right, and more likely what's being done that's wrong and swindling you out of your hard-earned tax dollars. Here for you as always,
The Great Canadian Talk Show on actionline.ca, also available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you want to get right down to business.
If your neighborhood's having trouble with crisis and crime, you don't think you're getting the kind of response you should be getting from your city council or your MLA, we are the Winnipeg Watchdog
with Marty Gold.
More of episode 40 of season 4 here on the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast, one of the most important interviews we've done, in this case, with a family who have questions about what happened when police went to apprehend their brother on a mental health warrant, and it turned into an unbelievable scene of destruction and, as it turned out, death. Before the break, we heard from Jerry Singer, the brother of Bradley Singer, who lived on Magnus Avenue, and Jerry described how the hospital, when he gets a call, your brother's been involved inside of the police, he was shot, he went to surgery, the hospital doesn't know who operated, and these cops from the IIU, they just walk out and say, oh, sorry, your brother, they don't even put it in that context of, like, what happened, they just go, oh, sorry about your loss, which is just a horrible way of, did the cops think you knew that your brother had died? Or did they think that was a good way of breaking the news to you?
Gosh, it seems like a standard blurb or cliche to use. Like every officer I ran into in connection with the incident used those words, sorry for your loss. But, you know, they weren't sorry enough to send a member of the police to attend his funeral or something, you know.
Well, there's nobody seems to be showing any sorry about this. And I'll get to that part as we work through this. With regards to what happened at the scene, the Black Rod blog, as I recounted in the earlier podcast, the link is in the episode description, folks, so you'll be able to catch up on that. It was part two of that episode. But the Black Rod blog put together the known details from the police press conference, from the media reports. Just before sunrise on February 14th, police showed up at the Magnus Avenue home to tell Bradley Singer they had a mental health warrant to take him to against his will to see a doctor. They claimed they were met at the door, and a news release described your brother as, quote, exhibiting agitated behavior and in possession of a crowbar. As the Black Rod blog noted, and I concur, a Magnus Avenue answering a knock at the door before sunrise while holding a crowbar would not be unusual. I know at the press conference that you held with another family with a similar incident with police, where a loved one was killed in the middle of a mental health warrant. I know that yourself and your lawyer raised a lot of points about the fear that Bradley would have felt, the fright he would have had at his door being hammered on at 7:30 in the morning in the wintertime on Magnus Avenue. Can you tell us a little more about that from your perspective?
Number of years with Bradley in that house, and I can tell you that you know, like from the years like early 90s to, you know, 2010 or something, a few times we had, you know, our door busted down by armed robbers who, you know, like there wasn't much to take, but they took you know, computers and TV,
well,
and
yeah,
knife point, and you know, you don't want to call the police because they're not going to do anything. But if the accused has to appear in court, you know, they'll come back and hurt you, you know. So it's legitimate too, but it goes out of character with my brother. I really can't see him, you know, like threatening the police with a weapon. And the fact that they don't wear body cams, we'll never know. You know, if they had been wearing body cams, there'd be no need for me to be on your show. You know, we'd know what happened. If Bradley posed a threat that required gunfire, we would see it.
Well, they claim, and this is a quote from the press release, as officers approached the male, meaning your brother, he discharged a fire extinguisher in their direction before retreating and locking himself inside.
I don't know. I guess, you know, he shouldn't have taken a fire extinguisher to a gunfight for starters.
Well, he started with a crowbar that he seemed to have put down. And
you need two hands to operate a fire extinguisher, so what, did they just stand there and wait for him to grab the fire extinguisher? I don't know. Like, you know, it's their narrative because there's no video of it.
According to...
I believe they're equipped with tasers. I don't know. We asked that question to the IIU, and they came back with answering that question would affect their investigation.
No, it wouldn't.
They haven't been very transparent with us about anything.
No, it wouldn't. All right.
See his body, and they wouldn't let us. They said it would interfere with their investigation.
Seeing the body.
What's this? Yeah, I'm hearing my brother's body. Just to say goodbye or let the reality of him dead sink in.
And they refused.
They refused.
Well, what happened, according to the police press release, was that the cops that Bradley supposedly wielded a crowbar towards before dawn and sprayed a fire extinguisher at. So we're not even clear that, and I'm not saying they didn't identify them as cops. He may or may not have acknowledged that they were police officers.
I have no idea. I don't know whether they were in uniform or undercover. These are like, they haven't told us anything. And their mantra is, we can't tell you until the investigation is over.
According to the press release, they called in the tactical support team that supposedly made repeated attempts, as they put it, repeated attempts to communicate with the agitated male, which were met with negative results. So this is all couched language that whatever they were saying to him, he wasn't buying. 45 minutes after the first arrival, the support team installed a battering ram on the response vehicle, and as the police put it, police language, breached and entered the residence. So they battered down the door.
And the window, and the back door. I'm assuming that, you know, that the reason they had to breach all those entrances was for their safety, you know.
Otherwise,
what logical reason? You have one way in, you're in the house, but probably they'll say something like, oh, so officers go home safe at night, we had to breach all the doorways, you know, to protect our officers or something like that.
As opposed to waiting outside the back door to see if he tried to run out the back, I guess.
Right, yeah.
They claimed that they continued to try to communicate with the male who had now barricaded himself in a second-story bedroom.
Well, it's not much of a barricade. It's just passage locks on the, like a lock to the bathroom or something, type of lock on the bedroom doors that exist there.
The Black Rod had asked, how did he barricade in the room? Was it with a chair? Was the door just closed? They then claim, again for the press release, the male again discharged a fire extinguisher at the TST members. After some time, the male exited the bedroom and confronted officers while armed with a large-edged weapon.
What does that mean, a large-edged weapon? Is that a kitchen counter? Is it a... why can't they just show a picture of what he was armed with? I don't understand. How does that compromise our investigation?
So it could have been a machete? Could have been a screwdriver?
No, it could not have been a machete. My brother did not own any knives like that or any guns. He, had nothing like that.
So...
even have the so-called crowbar, he was doing repairs in his bedroom. It wasn't there as a weapon. He was changing his shelves around or something.
Mm-hmm.
And using it to pull out screws that were, that type of thing.
So
it wasn't there as a weapon.
Here's what he was facing. Again, a compilation of the news reports and the police press release. 9 tactical support team members, each wearing 17 pounds of body armor, armed with guns, who had just chased the man upstairs. He was no threat to anyone because, I mean, he's not wielding a gun or a cannon or something. So you can't, it doesn't appear that he's in any position to really hurt cops that are armed and geared up in this manner, and was defending himself, so to speak, from what he perceived as a threat. And certainly, you know, being taken into custody, it's a threat to your liberty. The legal grounds for it are there. But how did this get escalated to discharging their firearms, as the police parlance use it, to the point where they then had to apply chest seals, multiple chest seals, and a tourniquet, which means he was shot a number of times, including at least one limb?
They left this huge puddle of his blood there. Like, they took over our house after this on a warrant for 2 days, and they just left this huge pile of blood, which I suspect, you know, I'm not sure he made it to the hospital alive, but, you know, we'll have to accept the police's and the IAU's word that he made it there. But it was such a huge, you know, it was like a 4x4 blood puddle, you know, that they just left there for us to clean up. And
the police, the acting police chief, Art Stannard, who's been hauled out of retirement, he said that this kind of a call did not warrant calling in what's called the ARC team, which has a police officer and a clinician. So you try to get somebody who understands mental health issues to talk the person they're trying to apprehend coming into custody. And the cops insisted, Art Stannard insisted, the safety conditions, the information we had, it was definitely a police response. That sounds mystifying.
Immediate past where some guy actually was discharging
yes.
a firearm at police, and yet they felt it was appropriate to call counseling in on that.
That was 3 days before on college.
Another incident like that where there was an armed hostage taking where they sent in the counselors.
That was two weeks before.
I don't know for sure that they were equipped with tasers. That's another big secret. I'm assuming that they should be because they have access to the equipment, you know. Like, they certainly could have used a taser to disarm them. They certainly could have used their body armor and electrified shields to just, if two of them just took their shields, they could have easily knocked them over, you know. And if it resorted to gunfire, like, surely a bullet to the shoulder would have knocked whatever he had in his hand out, or a shot in the foot, you know, that would be extremely painful. He's not going to mount much threat after that.
Now, the theory that the Black Rod has in essence put together, and that other people are buying into, is, again, from the press release, that the police had gotten an order on February 8th to bring Bradley into the hospital, and they had made several attempts to find him or to get him to come out or whatever, and it failed, and the clock was ticking on that warrant, and it seems that they didn't want to go back to court and get the warrant because then they have to admit to the judge, well, this guy's just not coming out of the house and we don't know what to do, which is odd.
There's no shame in that. They could have just got a new warrant and said, look, our only way of getting this guy out is harming him. So can we renew the warrant and develop a new strategy? Like, there's no shame that they couldn't catch him. You didn't have to, you know, well, I can't really say that word because that's not true. But, I mean, he didn't have to die so unnecessarily because the warrant was expiring.
I don't know about that. The law provides that a peace officer may take reasonable measures when acting under the section of a mental health warrant. And the question is, who's going to define reasonable measures when an innocent man, because he's not guilty of any crime, was shot to death in his own home, finding intruders at 7:30 in the morning at daylight, and maybe or maybe not, because he was prone to delusions, comprehending what he was seeing or dealing with? The question is, how does the IIU adjudicate that? And that's why the Black Rod and others in the community are saying this requires a jury. And as the Black Rod put it, the police have been described as the thin blue line. This time they crossed that line. Charge him. I'm not asking you to comment on that conclusion, but certainly that seems to be a reasonable point of view, because it does not seem to be a reasonable measure. No taser, no like smoke bomb, concussion, whatever concussion device they use, they just turn around and not shoot once, but multiple times. And this is like 10 or 12 or 15 officers seemingly on at the scene of the incident on the second floor of that house.
Well, I'm not sure if, this is like a criminal matter, like it's, like sort of driving drunk maybe and running somebody over. That's not, there's no mens rea for them to...
There's no mens rea, you're saying. There's no predetermination, but things escalated and somebody may have made a mistake that should be adjudicated by a jury and by a judge.
I mean, it's in the realm of manslaughter, maybe, or criminal negligence. So I don't know. I'm just a regular dummy. I'm not a lawyer or a judge. I don't understand the law system that well.
One thing I want to mention is that this past week, the Black Rod posting, for the first time since that story, that analysis of the shooting of Bradley Singer, that 4 days after that post was put up online, blackrod.blogspot.com, the blog was notified. Somebody had complained, and all 20 years of posts were being blocked permanently. A first appeal was not responded to, according to the blog. A second appeal was filed and was answered in 5 minutes, not in violation of community guidelines. So there's a belief that pressure was brought to bear on Google, that operates Blogspot, to silence this criticism of the Winnipeg police, and not just the criticism, but really a blow-by-blow analysis of, well, here's what they say, here's what the news stories say, this is what actually happened, and it doesn't meet what was said by the by who was it, Bonnie Emerson, a senior official with the police, who tried to make excuses. Oh, the police do the best they can, and it really looked like they were trying to lay down some turf to soften the blow, if in fact there's any finding that the police overreacted in the delivery of a mental health warrant and apprehending somebody, that they went too far. Bonnie Emerson, she's the superintendent of community engagement is what they call her. They do the best they can with the circumstances they're presented with. They're presented with a guy who's 59 years old and is no threat to anybody. And Bonnie Emerson was trying to make excuses for the cops.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the truth would be nice. And like I say, if they were transparent and wore body cameras, we'd know what actually happened.
One of the people that is opposed in the past funding for body cams is none other than Mayor Scott Gillingham back when he was finance chair, but I digress. I want to talk, because we just got a couple of minutes left here, about the effect on your family and what else has happened. I made reference at the beginning of the podcast. You can't get any answers. The medical examiner has still not released the autopsy to you?
No.
You are not believing that your brother was alive when he went to the hospital?
I don't want to say anything defamatory or accuse anybody of lying, but I mean...
Well, belief isn't defamatory in this instance.
There was an awful lot of blood there. And by the hospital, not saying something like, "Oh, we don't know who operated on him." I don't know. It kind of,
Can I ask you?
Fishy.
Can I ask you? You've got a very good and respected lawyer working with you on this, and to some extent, giving you some advice, perhaps. Have you asked the Health Sciences Center for your brother's medical file?
I'm not sure who he asked. He just told me that all his written requests didn't even, nothing. There wasn't even a response, like a receipt, like, "Thank you, we received your request, we're looking into it."
Do I have your permission when it's not Yontif? Can I contact your lawyer and just pose a couple of questions to him about that? Because I've worked cases like that. And I think we might have filed a FIPA for it, a Freedom of Information request. But in the past, I've gotten families files that were so revealing that Teresa Oswald, as health minister, was forced to stand in the floor of the question period in the legislature and apologize to the family because of negligent care in HSC in their emergency ward. So my experience is you should get an acknowledgement, and they should give you that medical file.
Yeah, well, feel free to call Mr. Glazer. He's very good at answering questions and very nice person.
So he's right now, though, Glazer's getting nowhere. You have not gotten the coroner's report.
No, that's why they joined up. He joined up with the Nigerian young man who was killed on New Year's Eve.
Right, in Fort Garry.
That's for a joint inquest because the incidents were so similar and so in such a short time span that, you know, they think that it should be looked together as an inquest.
And it's not that the cause of death is in question. We know it was from shooting. The question becomes whether the police tactics that led up to it are suitable for the situation, particularly with two instances of individuals with mental health problems, and whether this is, I mean, there's a few questions. Does this meet policy? Is the policy sensitive to these kinds of cases or not? Does the policy need to be changed? These are all in the public interest. It would be in the public interest for you to get the...
It's a slippery slope. Like, what's next? I don't know. It seems like they have a lot of American training, I'm assuming, or the police department. What's next? Some, you know, First Nations members pulled over for a traffic violation, or reaches into the glove compartment and gets shot. You know, it's when we treat, you know, our most weakest and vulnerable people in our society like this. You know, it's not. Doesn't bode well for the rest of us.
So it speaks not only to policy, but it also speaks to training and practice in the field. Now, a couple of other questions I want to make sure to get in here with you, if I can, Jerry. Number one, last week you got a bill in the mail.
Yeah. My brother had all of Bradley's mail forwarded to him. He's acting as the executor. And so he opens up a bill that's for $250 ambulance from the ambulance ride to the hospital the day he was shot by the police.
That's disgusting.
Another incident, they took over the house by warrant and for 2 days. And the first day we went down there, they wouldn't let us into the house. But we asked them, are you going to close the house up? They said, oh, absolutely. And we arrived there just as the Humane Society, my brother had two cats, so the Humane Society was removing one cat and the other one just hid. We managed to get the cat from the Humane Society. It was an older cat. They probably, you know, would have had to put it to sleep because not too many people adopt older cats.
Right.
The odd person does. And they promised they're going to seal up the house. Then I get a call the next day from the IIU. Oh, the police are giving you back the house. So I go there, and nothing's boarded up. The front door is open, the window's open, and the back door's open. And I asked the gentleman, the officer, I said, I thought you guys said you were boarding the house up. He says, oh, no, that's your responsibility. So if this is like, I don't know, at 8 o'clock at night, I'm a 66-year-old man with no tools and $20 in my pocket. So he just left me there. So I go on Google, I find this...
emergency service.
Emergency board-up service. Mm-hmm. So I phone the guy, he says, I can be down there in 15 minutes and fix this up for you, but I want $300 cash. So I phone up a friend, he runs down there and lends me $300. And this guy boards up the house in less than half an hour. Then he tells me, he says, you got tricked. I says, what do you mean I got tricked? He says, well, if you weren't here, they would have had to pay me or one of my competitors to board it up. But because you're here, you know, and it's your family's house, so you have to bear the expense of doing it.
That's right. So the police on the... Wait. Wait a second. So the police on the one hand complain about derelict housing, and then on the other hand, they created a derelict house and left it up to the people mourning the death of their brother? Did I get this right?
Basically, like, it's just, you know, it's insensitive. Like, you know, we struggled just to get him buried, and we owe a lot of money to the funeral home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably around, I don't know, $10,000 to $20,000 damage to our house to make it livable or saleable.
Now,
or,
is there a way, just to conclude this interview, Jerry, and I appreciate you speaking so frankly with me about this. Is there a GoFundMe or something that your family set up?
For asking. We set up with, it's called, hang on, I'll get the proper address.
Yeah, please. And then I'll be urging people, if they can, to help your family out in this time, because these are, nobody anticipates having a situation where the police caused, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 of damage, and then a funeral bill on top of it, and then an ambulance bill on top of that. That's a disgrace. I'm just shaking my head at that, honestly.
Okay, we set it up with Give, Send, Go.
Give, Send, Go, okay.
Give, Send, Go, .com/Brad Singer. I'll repeat that again. Give, Send, Go, .com/Brad Singer. If people could help us, we'd really appreciate it. I'm not sure what'll happen if we don't pay the funeral bill with the victim, or but you know, we'd really help anything, no gift too small or too big.
I'm going to put that link in the episode description, so people, when they go to actionline.ca to listen to this episode, or if they go through Spotify, it'll be in that episode description as well. But folks, you'll be able to see that link. And if you know, for those of you listening, if you are in a position to donate, especially our Lanzmann, the Jewish community, send this along to 5 or 10 other people, because everybody, one way or the other, knows one of the members of the Singer family, up and down the line, across generations. I know of those that are older than myself, like Jerry, and those that are from a generation younger. And this is a family that's in a time of need, in a time of great distress, not getting answers, and really not getting a break. Everything's been really, slanted against them so far in this process. They're going to continue to ask for answers. I'm going to get a hold of Martin Glazer as well, and try to get a little more insight into things. And Jerry Singer, I want to assure you, the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast, the kind of work that I've done for years, I will fight on behalf of yourself and your family to get answers, to get support. And if this results in a change in some of the civic or police practices, then that's the betterment of society. And nobody should go through what the Singer family has had to go through in this regard. And nobody being apprehended on a mental health warrant, short of aiming a gun or a cannon at a cop, should end up losing their life.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Marty, for having me on your show and being such a great watchdog for our community. Appreciate it.
Folks, that wraps up this episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. We're here for you, just like I am for the Singers. We're going to have more episodes coming up, another episode with somebody else with a big concern about police response and 911 response, etc. So we're going to continue to follow up on those kinds of stories, as well as being a watchdog on City Hall, on the legislature, on the healthcare system, on the provincial government, and on things that are going on in your community. You can get a hold of me, martygoldlive@gmail.com. I was raised into this industry to be an advocate, to be a watchdog, to speak out on your behalf, and we will never waver from our motto. We do this work because you have the power. Thank you for listening.
When you support the Great Canadian Talk Show, your donation makes sure that the investigations, the interviews, the fact-finding, the truth-telling can carry on. When you sponsor the Great Canadian Talk Show, you're telling the community that you think their stories matter. Our public affairs coverage continues to make a difference, challenging the slanted media narratives and giving a voice to the community. When you provide funding for the Great Canadian Talk Show, you're supporting old-fashioned investigative reporting that matters. Support TGCTS today.
Thanks for listening to the Great Canadian Talk Show. If you want to email Marty, send it to TGCTS1@gmail.com or follow him on Twitter @TGCTS.